And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
And I'm Martin Woodward.
And this is the week, right? This is
a big week.
So I'm sure a lot of you have already grabbed the bits. Windows 8,
yep.
Consumer Preview,
uh-huh.
And the Visual Studio 11 beta all went live on Wednesday,
yep.
Right, February 29th. And so I haven't had time to actually install Windows 8. I've been so busy with Visual Studio 11 and everything else. I think you're kind of in the same boat.
I am, indeed.
I'm jealous. I'm watching my coworkers walk around with the consumer preview, but I'm excited to get my hands on it.
It's funny, actually. We were in town this week. We've got the MVP Summit. So the MVP's up for the MVP Summit.
Right. Yep.
Which is interesting. The first time I was on the show. Remember all those years back when I got MVP of the year?
Yeah.
Anyway, so they're all up for the MVP Summit. And they came in Wednesday morning. Some of them managed to download Windows 8 from the hotel already, and they're all sharing it around.
Yep.
Before the day had finished, nearly all of them are running Windows 8.
That's awesome.
With Visual Studio 11 and TFS 11.
Yeah.
And it was amazing.
That's awesome. So. It's a really exciting week.
Definitely.
And, so we've got a lot to get through. Let's jump on to the next story here. So speaking of installing Windows 8, Scott Hanselman did an excellent blog post, as usual, around how to install Windows 8 for boot to VHD. He did a similar blog post in the developer preview. So you were looking at
this is exactly how I'm looking to do it. Yeah, because I currently run, for various reasons, Windows Server on my laptop, and I wanted to try running Windows 8, and so I thought I'd give boot to VHD a try. So that's what I'm going to give a go. And it'll hopefully allow me to, I can have the different VHDs there and select, but it's, easier for me than doing, say, multi-boot.
Yeah, that's true. So there are some misconceptions I find when people start looking at boot to VHD. A lot of people assume that because VHD is the same file format as you get with a virtual machine, they assume that they get all the same benefits as you get within a virtual machine.
So you don't get snapshotting.
You don't get snapshotting. Okay. You can do that manually.
Like you can just take a copy.
Like get the drivers exactly how you want them and then freeze that as a backup.
Uh-huh.
But you can't do that kind of on a console basis like you would with Hyper-V.
Okay.
The other disadvantage is that if you were to take a virtual machine, if I was to get things into the state that I wanted to and then export it to you, you can do that because the hardware is abstracted, right?
Yes.
Whereas with boot to VHD, it is effectively you're running on the metal. However, the upside of boot to VHD, and it's a big upside, especially if you're trying a lot of betas and that sort of thing, is that you don't have to completely like redo your partitioning strategy every time you get a new OS you want to try.
Right.
So you can just have a folder on your drive and point to all the boot to VHD images from your boot config, and Scott explains how to do that. It's really easy.
Yeah. Great. And do you have to have a fixed disk VHD size, or can it be a flex? Can it grow?
You have two options. I personally prefer fixed disks, which you can grow manually later on. With a dynamic drive, the idea is that you can say this drive should be a dynamic 150 gig drive, and when you boot it up, it instantly occupies all that space, and then when you shut it down, it goes back to whatever original space it was. The reason I don't like that is, number one, you still have to have all that free drive space in theory on your drive so that it can grow to that size. And then number two, if you use dynamic drives, there's actually a bit of a performance overhead as compared with fixed disk drives.
Okay.
So for me, I mean, I don't mind booting in, and I can easily grow the partition later on or grow the VHD file later on if I need to.
And it's so easy now in Windows to just increase the underlying disk, and then you just go into Disk Manager and increase the size of the volume.
That's right. Yeah, it's a two-step process, but it's not that painful.
Fantastic.
So,
it's way to go.
Yeah, so that's one great way to try out Windows 8.
Brilliant.
Here's a list of great Windows 8 downloads for developers all in one place. So this is off of the Windows Developer Center. Any of your favorites off of here?
Yeah, they have some design assets, so a bunch of PSD files and things to help you do all the icons and all that Metro goodness.
Sure. Yeah.
And then they've got, I think it was nearly 200 samples. It was an amazing number of sample applications you could use, and just to understand how to start programming Metro-style applications for Windows 8. So yeah, it looks good.
Fantastic. So what else? Channel 9, so right here, filmed right here, Robert Greene did an interview with Jason Zander,
who's our boss.
He's our great boss. He's basically in charge of the Visual Studio division and .NET framework and all that great stuff. And so he kind of took Robert through some of his favorite features that are in Visual Studio 11. Mm-hmm. So so Jason's one of these execs that I love, just like Scott Guthrie. Not just saying that because he's my boss, but he's very hands-on. He does his own demos.
Yep.
You know, I'm oftentimes offering, like, Jason, I can get that demo ready. No. I want to get in and figure it out. So it's always fun watching Jason go through that.
Yep, he's a proper developer.
He is. So this is a virtual machine that I put together, which is based on Visual Studio 11. It includes the beta of Visual Studio 11, Team Foundation Server 11, .NET Framework, all that related stuff, and ALM sample data, users, project data, sample source code. So really, if you want to get your hands on what our ALM capabilities are in this release, this is kind of a one-stop Hyper-V VM that you can download and port into either Windows Server or Windows 8 now supports Hyper-V right there in the client. So you can port it into Hyper-V there. And then I have 6 hands-on labs and demo scripts that take you through.
Yeah, it's not just playing with Visual Studio and TFS, but it's actually being able to go through the hands-on labs and the demo scripts and just being able to learn about what's new. It's great.
Yeah, exactly. So check that out. I hope people will enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
And so last week we covered a little bit of this. So
had some questions from the MVPs when they were asking about the Go Live license because Visual Studio, when you go to the download site, it's saying about Visual Studio is supported for Go Live. So do you want to explain what Go Live means?
Yeah, so typically, by default, our sort of standard license agreement for any pre-release software we ship at Microsoft is that you can only use this on test hardware to kind of kick the tires and learn about what's coming, but you can't deploy it into production or use it to support real production projects.
Yes.
Well, for the last few years, for the last 10 years, customers have been telling us that, hey, your betas are really great. We feel like we want to put those into production. And so we've been issuing Go Live licenses for not everything, but for a limited set of scenarios and providing support backed by Microsoft support that will help you if you encounter any problems. And so this release, the beta, is a Go Live license. We outline how you can upgrade from the beta to the RC and to RTM bits.
Yeah.
If you have issues you encounter, you can call Microsoft support. Actually, it's not a call. It's a link to a Connect site that you fill out, and then they open an issue on your behalf.
Okay.
So it's not the same 24/7 uptime support you would get for some other Microsoft products.
Yes.
But at least it allows you to get unblocked and continue to use the products for production use.
Yeah. Now, the important thing to mention about Team Foundation Server is because obviously if you're putting data into TFS. You don't want that to go away again at the end of the go-live period. So one of the things mentioned with the go-live license, what we're saying there is we will upgrade your data from TFS 11 beta.
Mm-hmm.
When the RTM comes out, you'll be able to go straight, install TFS 11 RTM, and that'll upgrade the data from the beta release over into the RTM release, so you won't lose any history or anything like that.
It
makes it safe to go live, and give it a try with the beta.
Definitely. The other cool thing I like about this, Martin, is that not everyone on your team has to make a wholesale switch.
Exactly.
So in the past, you would have had, if you're working on a set of projects and solutions, you would have had to upgrade all those to the latest version, and everyone stuck with that version.
Yeah, because as soon as you go in and edit the file, the solution file will change.
It's a one-way upgrade.
Exactly.
Now they've done a lot of great work to make sure that the projects and the solutions remain compatible between Visual Studio 11 and Visual Studio 2010 SP1.
Yep.
You have to make sure you have SP1 on there. But as long as you do, then you should be able to do full bidirectional. I open a project in VS 11 and save it, and you open it in VS 2010 SP1.
And the Visual Studio, one of the things I always mention to people as well, you can upgrade the server, so you can upgrade Team Foundation Server, but you don't need to have everybody running the latest version of Visual Studio.
The clients can still connect.
And
there's a
forward compatibility patch, and there'll be a forward compatibility patch for 2008 coming along, hopefully towards the end of this month.
That's right. So great post here from Chris Sells. Chris Sells, unfortunately, no longer at Microsoft, but still doing a ton of Windows 8
Lots
training.
Of great work.
He's over at Telerik, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a Telerik right now. Anyway, Chris Sells is kind of the authority on the Metro-style templates that ship within Visual Studio.
Uh-huh.
He helped write these when he was at Microsoft. And he has a great set of blog entries here that goes through and walks down what are the specific changes introduced in beta.
Great.
So if you were on the developer preview and you're looking to get comfortable with the beta, this is a one-stop shop to kind of understand those templates.
Fantastic.
And then Alex Golish has a great, I like this, theme here. He's got 11 tidbits on Visual Studio 11.
And they're not short.
He says tidbits,
but they're not short posts at all.
Exactly. And so he really takes you through the top 11 things that he feels you need to know in order to be a great Windows 8 developer with Visual Studio 11 beta.
Yep.
Yeah. Visual authoring for the Windows 8 community preview with Blend and VS.
Okay.
So yeah, this was news to you.
It was indeed. I didn't realize it was coming out, sort of thing, straight away.
That's right. Yeah. So the Blend editors, what they've done is they've included them now with Visual Studio Pro and above.
Fantastic.
And even the Windows 8 Visual Studio 11 Express for Windows 8.
Yeah, there you go.
With a little reserve trademark symbol and all that good stuff. But anyway, all those are now included, and uh-huh. So you can use the Blend designers for creating your XAML applications right within. There's no separate tool to switch back and forth.
And I've seen people using the Blend tooling, helping them with the transitions and some of those sorts of animations and things, and then going and using the Visual Studio side for hardcore code editing. And
which is great. I mean, we've been saying this for years.
Yes.
That design really needs to be an integral part of your application.
Uh-huh.
And so now this isn't... It's not a substitute for having properly trained designers working on your project, but it does allow you to bring those tools into one kind of...
Emerge the disciplines.
Yeah, emerge those disciplines, and exactly.
Okay.
F-Sharp 3.
Yeah, so tell me about F-Sharp 3.
You're a huge F-Sharp developer. No, I'm not either. I've never written a line of code in F-Sharp. But the promise here is interesting because F-Sharp 3 beta now supports portable class libraries.
Okay.
And so with portable class libraries, you can basically write a class library once, and then you can use it in a Windows Phone application or a Windows 8 application or a desktop application. And so now with F-Sharp 3, you can write portable libraries that can then be used from... say a desktop application and a metro style application.
Okay, I understand.
So you can't write like a XAML F sharp application with Metro, but what you can do is you can write, you know, any pick your flavor of metro style application and then call into those F sharp libraries.
Interesting to see what the interface looks like as well from say C sharp into an, you know, what an F sharp, how that presents itself as an interface.
But yeah, I'm not gonna pretend to be an expert there. I think I need a physics degree or something. Actually, don't you have a physics degree? This is your homework for next time.
Well, it was the thing I learned about F sharp was when they were looking about the HP 35 calculator. I think I had it as a thing of a week a while ago.
Right, yeah.
That was like, you could do so much stuff with it. It was amazing.
That's
anyway.
Like a pick of the year.
Exactly.
Love that one. So ASP.NET Web APIs, what did you learn about this one?
Yeah, so last week you mentioned about the ASP.NET MVC4 beta had been shipped.
Right, and it's also in
Visual Studio
11.
This week we shipped it in Visual Studio 11 in the box. So, and you know when you are, you know, nowadays sort of the SOAP standards and the web star, you know, WS star standards, people aren't really using those as much for, you know, we use them in enterprise applications, but you don't really use them in websites.
Right.
It's all RESTful APIs and, you know, passing JSON around. Well, the web APIs, .NET, ASP.NET Web API is a bunch of tooling to help you build web APIs. So from doing the, you know, the JSON transfer or some simple XML transfer, and URL encoding things in, you know, in forms, that sort of thing, through to how to route that in MVC to the right, you know, to the right controllers and all those sorts of things. So it's a bunch of functionality and support to help making web APIs easy, really. Now, Scott Guthrie had a blog post sort of talking about ASP.NET, you know, the web APIs, and just introducing it, the framework.
Yeah.
He's got a link to, there's a link lower down about learning more, where it takes you to the official documentation. But if you go on to the next pick, Sean Wildermouth had a great run-through from sort of, you know, end-to-end of how to do a web API in ASP.NET.
Okay.
And, you know, he's got some good screenshots and some good examples. So the documentation is obviously quite, you know, lengthy, whereas that was a great introduction just to help me understand what was this, functionality did it provide.
Translate it for me,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Translate from Goo to the rest of us.
Well, I think, you know, Scott Goo will probably do his lengthy post later, but, yeah, Scott was just pointing to the official documentation where Sean had a nice, just a one-off run-through.
That's great. And do you know if this can be used to create OData services as well, or is it strictly for websites, web pages?
Now, I was going to ask you about that, because it's a topic for the reader, because you can emit JSON and things like that, but it's not, as I understand OData, it's this particular syntax of doing CRUD over a database.
Right. But it's REST-like, so I was wondering, it seems like this is kind of in the domain.
Kind of linked. I don't know. Let's find out.
Exercise for the reader.
Exactly.
Yeah, we'll find out from our viewers.
Yep.
So, Windows Phone SDK 7.1.1.
What's new?
So here's the story.
Okay.
Windows Phone is very specific, as they should be, about the type of chassis that OEMs are required to support. So it has to have a camera, it has to have X amount of RAM, it has to have...
camera button and up down
buttons. Yeah, all that stuff, right? And so, so they allow some flexibility within that, but for the most part, if you're a consumer and you go and you buy a Windows phone, you know exactly
know
what you're getting. Well, based on a lot of feedback that they got from the hardware manufacturers who are looking to create lower-priced devices that still have the same, love about Windows Phone, they basically gave more flexibility now so that they can create Windows Phone devices now that have only 256 megs of RAM, that maybe the camera is optional, maybe the processor isn't quite as beefy. So that should expand the market and the reach of Windows Phone.
Okay.
But obviously that has some implications for developers as well.
Right.
So Windows Phone 7.1.1, the SDK, it addresses that lower form factor. It allows you to write your application to either restrict it to those high-end premium devices or what we now know as the standard Windows Phone devices.
Yeah.
Or if you're going to deal with those other other lower-powered devices and less feature-rich devices, it allows you to make adjustments within your code to maybe have fallbacks and that sort of thing.
Okay.
So that's the number one thing it does. And then the other one is something like 500 bug fixes.
Yeah.
Just goodness in general.
Now, the important thing to remember, this is a CTP level at the minute, so it doesn't come with a Go Live license.
That's right. So you can use it to start kind of getting
ready. But this isn't ready for submitting
to marketplace.
Phone. Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Good point.
Windows Phone.
Speaking
about Windows Phone.
Yeah, exactly.
Background agents.
So Mr. Godcat, as he was called, I'm not quite sure what his real name is. He had a great...
his real name, actually.
Okay. He had a great introduction into doing background agents. You know, they came new in Mango in 7.5, was it?
I know all about them, but if someone didn't, can you remind us?
Well, background agents came into Mango, and they allow you to run... pieces of code in the background, as they say, without hammering the battery life and without hammering the phone resources.
Okay, so is this while your app is closed?
While your app is no longer,
Tombstone.
Exactly. Yeah,
okay.
It's Tombstone.
Got it.
So the reason why it's slightly different is obviously it sort of groups them together to say things. If you needed to go use the radio, then it would group the jobs together so that the radio was switched
only fires
on.
Up once.
Exactly.
Oh.
And then run all the jobs and then switch them down, and then the radio goes off again for a little bit longer. Those sorts of things. Well, there's a bunch of restrictions and a bunch of ways you can build them and some patterns and things to use. And Mr. Godcat went through and explained some of those and gave a great roundup. But he also links into the detailed API documentations, and MSDN and things like that, if you want more information. So it's a good introduction.
I've seen a lot of, now that you mentioned that, I really didn't know what background agents were all about before, but now that you mentioned that, I've noticed a lot of my applications taking advantage of that. So like the weather bug, right? It's updating in the background. I don't have to remember to go in and press refresh. I get an alert in the middle of the night that there's a windstorm. That's a great scenario.
Yeah, the two ones I use are the RunKeeper is an application I use for tracking runs and things. So I'm training for something at the minute, and then there's a Twit phone application which does some stuff in the background as well. It's good stuff.
So you're training for something where you have to run?
We'll talk about that later.
It's the bank heist, isn't it? So Touch Develop, we had mentioned this on Channel 9 earlier. My friend Grant Bronston actually he was an intern on this team. So hi Grant. And so the idea with Touch Develop is you can actually create programs on your Windows phone. So you pull out your phone and you say, I need a for loop and I need these objects, and you can create a little game or whatever. And so they kind of launched it as this experiment, and it quickly jumped up to like one of the top 100 apps on Windows Phone.
Yeah.
And so this is a new book and a set of slides that really goes much deeper.
Right.
Nikolai Tillman, who used to work on PEX. So he was one of the original guys behind PEX.
Clever guy, then.
Yeah, exactly. Very smart. And so it's good to see that that he's doing some stuff in Windows Phone.
Wow, there you go.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a cool project.
Yep.
Getting started with HTML5.
Yeah.
Serious. So not much more to say other than, getting started with HTML5.
It sounds like it might catch on.
Yes,
so
exactly.
A bunch of important things
I'm waiting for HTML10. I don't know. I'm a holdout. So Juice UI, so this is a set of controls that the ASP.NET team, I'm not quite sure what their involvement is, okay. whether they're contributing to this or whether or not they're partnering with the community or exactly what's going on here. Mm-hmm. But basically, this is a set of controls that you as an ASP.NET web forms developer mm-hmm. can use to take advantage of lots of really nice, they've got like animating buttons on here, progress mm-hmm. bars, dialogues, all sorts of really nice JavaScript controls that most modern web apps would need.
Exactly,
today.
Or from jQuery. Yeah. Scott Hunter's actually talking as we're recording down at the MVP Summit right now, so
fantastic.
He might well be explaining to them about
this.
There
yes.
we go.
So, picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
Yeah. So,
what's this? Wow.
So, this is actually my picture is here, but really, this is Greg Duncan's pick of the week that I'm proxying on behalf of you, Greg. I'm also a huge Microsoft Flight Simulator fan, but I think he trumps me in this regard. So, Microsoft Flight, no longer called Microsoft Flight Simulator, but just Microsoft Flight.
We're shortening names. This is getting good.
It's great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's now, my understanding is it's free.
Okay.
It's released as of today. It's free. And then the way that they're monetizing it is just with additional content that you can purchase.
Oh, like in-app purchases sort of thing.
Yeah. So it turns out the Microsoft Flight Simulator community is just huge. Like they like
definitely.
Buying little airplanes and
uh-huh,
little
and different, like cities to land in.
Yeah,
and...
or like little like hot dog carts that you see in the airport. Like all just crazy stuff, right?
Okay.
But it's super cool, and they'll get the multi-monitor displays. So they're perfectly happy to pay for all this additional content that's coming
right.
out. Whereas the average user like you or me can download a free game and kind of fly around and crash into the ground or something.
And that's got to be better for us as well because they can get the revenue over time rather than having to wait every year. For
exactly, it. Oh, exactly. It's kind of the Zynga model, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, this isn't strictly related to developers, but for all those great developer machines and laptops you got out there,
exactly.
go fire up Microsoft Flight and you can play it on the plane and uh-huh. there's some sort of recursion joke in there somewhere. So
speaking of picks of the week, my pick of the week, as I mentioned, I'm running at the minute. I'm training for the Great North Run. So that's a big run. It's a half marathon.
Right.
So, and I, like,
that's awesome.
I couldn't run for 90 seconds until quite recently. So I'm doing it in aid of the Stroke Association. So my mum had a stroke before she passed away. So, I'm doing it in aid of the Stroke Association. I'm running the Great North Run in Newcastle at the end of the year. So I've set up a tiny URL. If anybody would like to donate, they're more than welcome. Don't feel like you have to donate a lot if you do come along. But it's tiny.url/runfatso is
awesome.
My URL. So there we
and
go.
You have. You've lost quite a bit of weight.
I've lost 70 pounds.
That's fantastic. Good for you. So. And good cause. That's really great. And so hopefully some of our folks in the viewing audience will feel compelled. I'm certainly going to make a donation myself.
Exactly. But or just go and learn about, go to the American Stroke Foundation mm-hmm. as well, and the American Stroke Association, and just learn about the signs of stroke, and so you can help anyone if you see them having a what might be a stroke.
That's great. Good advice.
Fantastic.
All right. Well, thanks, Martin, for being on the show, as usual.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next week.